This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
So, are you staying?
As of right now, I'm staying, Kev, yes.
As of right now, but are you going to get the things that... Are you comfortable right now saying that you're going to get the things you need and you are going to be at Maryland as the head coach next year and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's... You know, Brian Ullman has been phenomenal. He's the first guy that's actually sat down with me, talked to me, and really found out what my concerns and what I really wanted, you know, because it's not a contractual thing for me. It's more of a program thing for me. And Brian and I are on the same page. He has been awesome. He has put a lot of what I've felt over the last 3 years about the program. I think he's finally starting to understand where I want this program to go.
So Kevin Willard was on with 980 and DC Kevin Sheehan hosting the team in 980. And that was the question he posed him. Is he staying? He's staying. He says, right now I'm staying. And of course, he followed up talking about, was it Brian Ullman, who has been helpful. But with all that going on, and before we get to it, so we'll give you the full Monty here. Kevin Sheehan followed up with Kevin Willard about that Beltway. Ben, let's play that second cut from Willard talking about his situation with Maryland.
All right, you know I got to ask you this. Are you staying at Maryland or going?
Yeah. You know what? I've had, over the last week, I know I've said some things that have raised people's eyes, but, you know, Maryland's been great. We're in a perfect shape. I missed a radio show today, and everybody thinks, I missed the radio show today because I overslept. I'm on West Coast time now. Everything that my concerns have been about the job, and that was my whole point of my press conference, and, you know, maybe my jersey came out of me not in the greatest way, was, you know, I want to make this program the best, and I think when you have an opportunity to do it, you have to take advantage of the opportunity, Kevin. And, you know, obviously losing the athletic director has been a little bit of a, I wouldn't say it's been a little hard, to be honest with you, just because, you know, I wasn't expecting Damon to leave and go to SMU. But I've been working with Brian Ullman and everyone in the athletic department, and they've been great, and they understood my concerns and what I want. And again, I don't want monumental things. I just want, you know, this program to be the best it can be. And I think I'm not asking for that much.
So I think I'm in the minority here, but I somehow feel better about the situation listening to all that, but I don't think anyone else is with me on that.
Well, I don't feel any different than I did yesterday and probably the day before, which is this is an ongoing active situation in which Kevin Willard is clearly looking for people that he trusts and he thinks have his best interest in mind and he thinks share a vision with him. I don't believe that to be the assistant AD, who he did not mention there. I believe it to be this Brian
Ullman.
Who I'm not an expert on the inner workings of the program, but he seems to have found an ally there and someone who, if not running point on this contract situation, is at least involved in it. And I think he's sending a message to, excuse me, to everybody else at College Park who has a vested stake in this to deal with his agent, Jimmy Sexton.
By the way, Brian Ullman, for people who don't know, is Maryland Deputy Athletic Director / Chief Strategy Officer.
Okay. So, and I don't even know what the chain of command is right now. It's uncertain times and trying times with Damon Evans leaving in the middle of this. And we're not hearing much from the athletic program, and I don't expect to hear much from the athletic program. So I think Willard's exerting his leverage again in the public sphere in a very acute and smart manner. I think he's leaving himself just enough wiggle room to get out. If he's got to get out, he's trying to placate people in the interim, but he's still kind of throwing down the gauntlet. I'll take the kind of out. No qualifier needed. He's throwing down the gauntlet to the program that, okay, I'm now speaking about this again. I'm speaking about it in less forceful terms as before, but let's not get it twisted. I still feel how I feel about what it's going to take to get where we need to get. And you guys know, without me saying it out loud, that I probably have some other options, including one about an hour up the road on 95, or from, I guess, College Park, closer to 2 hours. And you're either going to step up or you're not. So I don't think anything's changed. I don't think Kevin Willard or his representation or the University of Maryland know exactly how this is going to play out just yet. But I would hope and think and estimate that in the next 48 hours, we will know more. Because Villanova is only going to want to wait so long. And some of these boosters are only going to want to play this game so long. And Kevin Willard might only want to play this game so long. So I think we're still just in a holding pattern.
He's continuing to put the program's feet to the fire. That is everything that is happening right here. He wants in his contract to be able to do things that he hasn't been able to do, like, for example, the New York trip that he mentioned last week, staying an extra day out there with his team to celebrate Christmas. And then also the rev sharing, where he mentioned in that interview, hey, some guys are getting $2 to $3 million and agents are playing this type of game, and we have to step up to the plate in terms of what we can provide possible guys in the portal. He's maintained the same position. If he does not get his demands, which his words saying not monumental, he's going to leave.
And I do wonder, there's another variable to this. There is, and Beltway Ben's been on all over this, but I guess Villanova people, there's some Richard Pitino buzz out there, Ben. Like, do you buy that? And if Richard Pitino then becomes the coach of Villanova, what happens to Kevin Willard's leverage?
I'd soft buy it, but if that were to happen, I think Willard loses all leverage. There's nowhere else that's really an option for him right now. I do think that because we're to this day and Villanova still hasn't announced anything, I think they're Willard's plan A and Pitino's plan B. But, I mean, time's going to tell. The more you get closer to that game, and there are some reports that they're not going to get a deal done with him before the game, are going to work after. If that happens, I just don't see a true plan that he's back. I just don't.
So here we are. It's the Tuesday before arguably the biggest Maryland basketball game in 20 years, and this is the priority right now. We're wondering the future of the head coach of the University of Maryland. As we discussed yesterday, Jason, if Kevin Willard leaves, it's hard to not see Maryland as now a stepping stone program.
It's potentially devastating. It's taken him 3 years to get to this point. Timing is everything, as they say, and you know, if this Villanova stuff is as real as it seems, then that's about as great of leverage as you can have to try to get this thing to the next level in the way that he sees fit. Now, we also don't, like, again, is his vision totally on point? Is it a little askew, or some of the things he's asking for a little bit pie in the sky? I'm not privy to that. I don't know that. But I do know that he's got them by the you-know-whats right now. And I have to think a lot of the money people there who've been through this, the ups and downs with this program, and remember how ugly it was when they literally paid a coach to go away at Thanksgiving, not that long ago. Boy, I would think a coaching search, an AD and coach search in the middle of the portal would strike them as massive setbacks for this program, and you could quickly erase the gains that you seem to have made with Willard. I would think they see it that way. But again, it's a weird time because you don't know who the next AD is going to be. I think Kevin Willard's made it very clear who he wants it to be. And if that were to happen, I would think Mike Locksley might not be so happy because Mike Locksley's portion of the cut might be dwindling in future years. But the school's probably got to pick a lane here. And if we want to be a big-time basketball school, is that really going to allow us to try to prop up the football program too?
I feel like they need to be realistic because they can be a legit competitor in college basketball. I just don't see how they're a legit competitor in college football. We'll get back to that a little bit later, but a huge show here on this Tuesday. We'll talk Orioles. It's the first of our weekly chats with Oriole Hall of Famer, part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight coverage. Mike Bordick joins us at 3. Walt Williams, the Wizard, the Terp. His jersey's in the rafters at the Xfinity Center. He's part of the broadcast with Johnny Holiday, Chris Knock, and get his thoughts on the Terps at 4 o'clock. Bill Ripken with baseball around the corner. We'll talk Orioles and MLB with him at 5.
Yeah, I mean, a lot to get to. I'm really interested to see what Bordy and Bill Ripken have to say about this Jackson Holiday, Jordan Westberg, jacking around people's positions situation. Walt Williams, I mean, look, Walt grew up a fan of this program before he became one of the greatest Terps of all time. His length and breadth of knowledge of this program is as deep as anybody's. Really interested to see where that Derek Queen moment ranks for him. Plenty of Orioles topics to discuss as they get closer to sorting out their roster. And the Ravens added a corner.
Yes. The Ravens
was pretty high
sign.
On him a couple years ago.
Yeah, I think we all were as he was making plays in a Super Bowl. But coming up next, we get to the Terps on the court. And they have had trouble stopping teams on the offensive boards. It was awful against a team in Colorado State that we didn't think had the size to match up with Maryland. How can they get better stopping teams on the offensive glass? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Honestly, I think Colorado State came in with a little attitude, and I'm not hating on them for that. I think that Nico Medved told his guys, you know, we couldn't beat these guys in 4 out of 7. All we have to do is beat them once. And this is a game that will, you know, that will endear that team. If they were able to get the W, that endears that group to Colorado State fans forever. You know, I mean, that's a program maker. And so I just think he had them all wound up. I thought he got Colorado State had great play off their bench.
So that's Chris Knocke, who joined us yesterday later in the show talking about Colorado State and how aggressive and well they played. And that aggressiveness included 13 offensive rebounds. And the Terps of late have not been doing great on the glass. And you'd think they'd be better with two bigs in Queen and Reese. But Michigan dominated them in the Big Ten tournament. And now Colorado State over the weekend. So with that in mind, how do they get better on the offensive glass, or stopping teams on the offensive glass?
Maybe I'm crazy, and if we had more time with Knocke yesterday, I would have asked him this. Could there be a time and place for all three bigs on the court at the same time? And Queen becomes more of a forward, and Queen is defending even more on the perimeter, and it's Juju, and it's Geronimo banging heads underneath.
It might need to be done. Obviously, you'd be sacrificing some offense and some three-point potential, but Florida is a great rebounding team. They're ninth in the country in rebounding differential at plus 8.2 per game. And you look at two of the past three games. Michigan, it was absolutely embarrassing, 47-18. And then Colorado State, it was 39-29. And the broadcast pointed this out at multiple points during the Colorado State game as well, and I agree. A lot of rebounding, and yes, size matters a lot.
Positioning.
positioning, and it's also effort. It's want to. There were a lot of 50-50 balls that Colorado State was coming down with, especially in that first half.
Well, the other thing is, I think the guards need to be more active. Yeah. Like, watching Wisconsin against Michigan after Maryland got dominated on the boards by Michigan, and you saw how much the guards for Wisconsin were helping out on the boards. I feel like these guys, Gillespie, Rice, and Miguel, need to be more active on the defensive boards.
Are they going to change their spot? I mean, where are they going to change their spots now, or do you need to mix up personnel? Like Colorado State, 36 points in the paint, 13 offensive rebounds. Northwestern had 22 points in the paint. Michigan State, 28 points in the paint, 13 offensive rebounds. Penn State, 16 points in the paint, 8 offensive rebounds. Michigan, 34 points in the paint, 9 offensive rebounds. When they're shaky or when they lose, this is very much a part of their DNA. They've been trying it a certain way all year. It's popped up against less skilled teams. It's popped up against teams that have two bigs. It's popped up against teams whose only true big had 32 rebounds all year. That's Colorado State. Mm-hmm. So, like, 32 rebounds on the year. Only kid over 6'10 on that team had 32 rebounds all year. And they got destroyed on the offensive board. So, I'm just wondering if you might need to spend these next couple of days thinking about a different rotation.
Well, let me ask you this. Who are you taking off? I mean, it's either Seldon or Rodney.
Yeah. Depending on the matchup, depending on the size of this of the other team's front court. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm starting the game that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I just wonder if there has to be a different sort of default to get to if things start spiraling quickly the way they've been spiraling.
Sure, but if you remind these guys that they need to be more on the defensive glass, then maybe it doesn't spiral that way.
Bro, we're 35 games in.
I get it.
It's been a problem.
But they're not rebounding. Like, maybe that's on coaching to tell these guys they need to be active on the glass.
You don't think they know they need, they've been told part of the game is rebounding?
Well, there's obviously a mind block because they're not doing it.
And we're to the end of the season.
I get it. But, like, I watch other teams and their guards are active on the boards. These guys aren't.
And they haven't been for quite some time.
And now on the season, guys, Maryland's rebounding differential, they're 98th in the country.
I mean, it's like, I think it's a problem. And you've given a wide swath to your starters. They get to play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's hands off. You get to run plays the way you want. Like, he's very much given them control of a lot of things. They haven't taken control of this part of it. You're going to tell me Kapari can't get a rebound above the rim? You're going to tell me Geronimo isn't the toughest kid on that team?
It's a weird situation where Kapari can't get on the court.
And I'm saying maybe that needs to change.
Yeah. Kapari hadn't been able to go on court for a month.
I think Kapari can get you a rebound.
It's a tough situation, but I'm not starting a game out like that,
no.
Like you're saying. But if it happens where Florida, like they have all year, they're dominating off the glass, I think it's something you got to consider. But you're sacrificing.
And if your point guard isn't cutting down on rim penetration, and we know that Queen's got his sort of issues defensively.
He's slow-footed.
Do you need a second rim protector on the field against this at certain times against this opponent?
Maryland,
I don't know.
Maryland and Florida coming up 7:30 on Thursday. Pregame coverage 6:30 right here on 105.7. The Fan. We continue talking about the tournament. Remember, coming up at 3:00, Mike Bordick. We'll talk Orioles with him. His opening day is just 2 days away. But one shining moment coming up next. And what do we think of the Big Ten through the first two rounds of the tournament? We discuss.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Us next here on The Fan. We have reached the sweet
spot. Yeah.
I love it. So. I know you hate it, but you hate everything.
No, I love a lot of things.
I
love more than I hate.
Ben, you love Ben. Animals.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I hate a lot of things, and I love more. I love animals.
That's what I said. You love animals.
I love trains. I hate airplanes. It all evens out.
Hey, before we get to the Big Ten discussion, let's hear from Mick Cronin, shall we? Coach UCLA. They've been eliminated.
Mick Cronin hates more stuff than me. And that's on the record. We all agree with that.
I think it's close. Yeah. Mick Cronin, does he look to next year yet?
Right now, guys, it's 12:40 a.m. and our season just ended. That's it. You're going to ask me about next year? Right now, my biggest concern is how bad the seats are on the Allegiant flight on that terrible plane that we're going to have to fly home tomorrow.
The school bus.
The cheese. The plain version of the cheese.
Hang in there.
And is there any chance that Doug got me some hot food because I don't eat on game day, that I got something edible? Not next year. Not right now, guys.
Wow, his standards are a little different than Kevin Willard's. But
could you imagine a weekly with Cronin?
Oh, be brilliant. It would be brilliant.
I would do anything.
So he coaches UCLA, obviously. They got eliminated.
They get him on the show every week.
Oh, man. But
what stuck in your craw today, Coach? Yeah. And then just let him go.
What grinds my gears? Remember that Australian guy thing? He's always got something. The Big Ten started with 8 schools. Half of them have gotten to the Sweet 16.
Ooh. I set the over-under at 2.5, so they exceeded my expectations.
Yes.
They started 10-0 straight up and 10-0 against the spread, Jason.
Yes. Yeah. I did not see that coming, Bone. Yeah. That was not good for me, Bone.
No.
Well, it's never happened before.
But then it evened out.
Yeah. For half of the teams got to the Sweet 16.
Purdue didn't play anybody, and Purdue got to play at home. And Purdue's still getting to play at home.
But they still got there.
They got there.
I'm old
Here's
remember,
where the story
I'm
all, ends. I'm it's the Sundays once sang.
But time out. I'm old enough to remember Louisville got to play at home, and how'd that work out for them? Not well. So
they should be better than Louisville.
Well, should be, but they like Louisville.
Was debatable whether they should be here. Purdue should have been here.
Louisville wasn't debatable to be in. The debate was they were 10th in the AP poll and they got an 8
seed.
They
shouldn't have been 10th in the AP poll.
So, alas,
they weren't 10th in the JLC poll.
They were like the third best team in the 5th best conference in America.
Alas.
Maybe the 6th best conference.
They do have 4 teams here.
I want an ACC CAA challenge next year.
Yes. 4 teams. I feel like the Big Ten has shown relatively
well.
They
showed up. They did well.
Yeah.
I gotta give them credit. I thought a lot of them would crash out. We all thought when the Terps went to Ann Arbor and beat Michigan, didn't we all? We all thought we've seen the best of the Wolverines.
Oh, you got to give Michigan a ton of credit. Not just
conference tournament, but Big Dance.
Yes.
I thought they were dead men walking.
Well, they lost, 3 or 4 in a row heading into the Big Ten tournament, and obviously have won out since.
And I thought they were losing to Texas A&M. And they came back and won that basketball game.
They probably should have lost to UC San Diego if they got a couple of
whistles. They should have lost to UC San Diego.
Well, UC San Diego, if UC San Diego could hit a shot in the first half.
They
could not make a shot in the first half and still came back.
How bullish are we on Sparty? Sparty struggled with New Mexico. Put them away late, but that was a game.
Yeah. Still covered, though, didn't they?
I was on the under, and I was good to go there. But I'm not sure if they probably did cover. Do we think Sparty can get to the Final Four?
I think they can beat Ole Miss.
If they beat Ole Miss, you don't think they could beat Auburn?
My stance still stands with them prior to this. If they run into a hot shooting team and they're going to have to go blow for blow.
New Mexico's a pretty good team. They beat New Mexico, and Jace Richardson did absolutely nothing offensively for them whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And they still scored like 80 points in a neutral site setting. They won with
71.
Offense. They won with offense, not really defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, man. Them throwing 4 bigs at Auburn could be interesting.
Here's the thing about Auburn, though, and Auburn's really good, but they seem to at times play really dumb, which scares me. If Auburn plays their game, they're arguably the best team in the country. The problem is, of late, they have been playing great basketball now, and they give them credit. They've won their first 2 games now. Alabama State didn't give them much of a fight. Early they did, but then Auburn pulled away. And Creighton hung in for about a half, and they pulled away there. But they haven't looked like the team that was running through everybody.
No. I think they're much more vulnerable now than I would have said 5 or 6 weeks ago. I mean, I think the other thing we need to point out about the Big Ten, if we're giving flowers. Like, again, pretty good draw for Purdue.
But you still got to win the
game. High point in McNeese. I know. And pretty good draw for the Terps.
Yeah.
12 and 13 seeds.
But you
That's
still
half of the 4 that are still there.
You still got to win the game.
And the other ones, Michigan, should have lost to UC San Diego.
But they didn't.
Sparty.
Yeah, they didn't. Should have, could have, would have, but they didn't. I know.
How many
big guys? You're like our caller.
The if guy.
They should have done this. They could have done this. They did.
I am the Big Ten if guy.
Anything to spin the Big Ten stinks for you.
Well,
they're a fourth of the field left. Now, they could all be gone after Friday.
We've also reached a point in time, though, where there should be four. I mean, if there weren't at least three or four Big Ten teams in it, something would be wrong because the haves and the have-nots have never been this diverse before. Like, there's never been this big of a chasm between the haves and the have-nots.
And that's been a big talking point nationally. Fox Sports Research, they tweeted this out, John Fanna. In the 64-team format going back to 85, there's never been a Sweet 16 to not see at least one non-major conference team. This is the first time ever that's happened.
That's
so
crazy.
Under that sort of cloud or backdrop, if that many Big Ten teams are going to get in, they should be close to 25% of the Sweet 16.
But is this,
and what the SEC's doing is bonkers.
But it's seven. I think that's the question, though. Is this year the anomaly, or is that going to be the norm because of
I think
NIL?
This is the new norm.
There will be times where mid-majors make a run. The problem is that mid-major that makes a run, those guys are going to transfer after the season. So there's no chance. There's no chance for that to have any sustainability. But we could see a situation where a school puts it together and makes a mini run.
But it's going to become tougher and tougher and tougher because in a lot of instances, even if you're a second-tier SEC team, you can make more money being a rotational bench guy at Ole Miss than you're going to make being the number one guy at some Summit or Horizon school.
Absolutely.
So that's why I think the chasm is just going to keep growing. I think this is, like, I'm trying to think back to last year. So NC State did their thing, but, like, who am I missing? Wasn't it kind of chalky outside of that?
I think somebody made a run last year. Some major made a run into the Sweet, at least in the Sweet 16. But I can't remember who it is.
I mean, I got a tweet from my friends this morning where it showed all the 16 teams, their starting five, and where their starting five started at. And it's crazy. Like, there's multiple teams where none of them started there. There's several of them where it's like only
the
one.
The big schools are going to get three cracks. So we missed out on, we didn't offer this kid as much as somebody else the first time around, and he went to Drake. And then the year after that, some other big school got him, Kansas, and we didn't. But now he's exactly what we need year three. We're getting him.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep throwing money at him until he comes here.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally, it's a feeder league for the three conferences that matter. Like, that's where it's become. That's where it's going to continue to go. And that's where Maryland has to decide what pot do you want to be in?
Well, and I expect the ACC, at least part of it, like if Carolina gets the right coach, they're going to be relevant again. That's Carolina. But I don't know about the rest of the ACC.
I'm saying, okay, so that's still, I mean, there's a lot of, how big is the freaking ACC?
It's a lot.
They added
Stanford and Cal and Syracuse.
Maybe
what has happened to Syracuse? What has happened to your alma mater? They're not relevant.
They're not relevant.
Gonzaga made the Sweet
Football coach, pretty interesting. He's promising all the kids a job within 60 days of graduation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gonzaga made the Sweet 16 a year ago. They're technically a mid-major.
Okay.
NC State was an 11 seed, but they're an ACC school.
Yeah. I just think this is the way it's going. This is what the landscape has become.
Oh, and San Diego State made the Sweet 16 a year ago, so they're a mid-major.
Well, and if the refs didn't rig that game for the Wolverines, we might have had UC San Diego in the Sweet 16 this year.
That's right. And anything to make Jason unhappy.
Between the NIL, yes. The portal, and then the refs being in on the take for the big schools. Yes.
This year's Sweet 16, SEC 7, Big 12 4, Big 10 4, Duke. That's the Sweet 16.
Get used to it.
Coming up next here on the program, we hit the hot corner. And
SMU, you think we're going to see SMU in the Sweet 16?
Andy Enfeld.
They're under new management.
Yeah, I do like Andy Enfeld. Grayson Rodriguez was on foul territory.
Oh, boy.
We're fans of foul territory. We've had those guys on the program. Grayson commented on his situation with his elbow. It's different than we've heard before. What do we think about this prognosis? That's next here on The Fan.
You know, I've had something I've been dealing with for the last 3 or 4 years. It kind of flared up on me. So, like I said, tricep flared up a little bit, had a little bit of tendonitis in the tricep. So we had to make sure that kind of calmed down and make sure it didn't get a lot worse. But thankfully, you know, like, had to get some checkups and some scans on the elbow, and it was all good. It was all healthy. So, you know, really fortunate with that news. But yeah, just making sure the inflammation could settle down a little bit and, you know, kind of start the ramp up process again.
So that was Grayson Rodriguez on the Foul Territory podcast. We've had those guys on the show. They do a great job. And he says he's been dealing with tricep tendonitis on and off for 3 to 4 years, and it flared up a little. Our friend Jacob Calvin-Meyer, IA Hall of Famer, pointed out that this Grayson Rodriguez situation has been described in multiple ways. He did not include sluggish, which was the first way, but tricep soreness, elbow discomfort, elbow inflammation with no ligament damage, elbow inflammation, impingement, and now tricep tendonitis. Grayson, for his part, says he's okay, and now basically spring training starts over, but it seems like every time Grayson talks, whatever's happening with him gets worse.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. Him speaking about pitching in some level of discomfort going back years, again, on the heels of Kyle Bradish saying, yeah, I made 9 starts last year where I felt like garbage and had to get the inevitable Tommy John anyway. It certainly has my spidey senses tingling, and it invites more questions about how they handle young pitching and whether they know how to quite build it up correctly, or the level of discourse and communication, the human element. I'll go back to it again. Like, if that's been conveyed to them over a period of time and this has been the end result, that's troubling. And if it hasn't been conveyed, that's potentially more troubling. This injury just keeps moving around.
Yes.
It would be pretty stunning if this is the first a team has heard of the triceps tendonitis on Foul Territory, and this has been going on for 3 years.
But why would something like that flare be like, why would that be allowed to flare up for 3 years?
I have no idea.
That's
with all the pitching infrastructure they have and all the machines that, that capture your biokinetics and all the pitching experts.
It's like Bateman with the hernia. It was flaring up every year. Remember it back all the way dating back to college, and then until it burst the 1 year here. He like worked his way through it every year.
Well, this guy hasn't.
No.
This guy hasn't worked his way through it any year. So that's kind of the difference.
He's pitched with it.
What full season?
Never.
But it's never been that. We've got to go back to AA.
But it's been lat.
The issue is the lat, yeah. Where that's cost him some significant time.
Well, it sounds like the issue isn't just the lat.
Well, it's not. I'm saying, but
the elbow hasn't caused him time yet until now.
What's costed him.
What usually happens with elbows?
Well, it's not good.
Now I want to see, because when he had his first IL stint last April, that wasn't the lat. Now I'm curious if that was the tendonitis.
Yeah, I thought it was tendonitis.
Right shoulder inflammation.
Oh, yeah, shoulder
inflammation. That
so
was
he's got
April
the shoulder, he's got shoulder, the lat. The elbow's in
the shoulder. The shoulder and the lat is that. That is.
Well, I'm not going to pretend to
be a doctor.
Monkey
bone connected to the butt bone. Those two, I think, are. I think those two are connected.
I'm not a doctor.
I have no idea.
I think what I know about Grayson Rodriguez is he can't stay healthy.
He cannot stay healthy at all.
Now, how do you even build him up? Like, he said start from scratch.
Yeah, he said spring training. Yeah.
It takes 2 months, right? Pitchers and catchers report the second week of February, and the season starts the end of March. To normally ramp somebody up. So, if we see him sooner than then, like,
there's no, he's got to start spring training over. We're not seeing him for at least a month.
No, yeah, I'm saying, like, wait a minute. If he's saying, he's on the record saying we got to completely reboot.
Yes.
What we did before doesn't even really count. Right? He's just playing catch for now. So, once he gets cleared to be pitching off a mound and then pitching in game situations, normally that's going to begin.
Like six weeks.
6 to 8 week process.
Yeah. He was, for what it's worth, and I know it's worth not much, but for people who aren't aware, before yesterday he had the rain delay, he was throwing from 90 feet on the field at Nats Park. So he was throwing, but that was not from a mound.
Yeah, you're talking mid-May, Memorial Day. somewhere in that time frame?
I mean, wouldn't you just move him to the 60-day IL? Like, why yes. would you be trying to
give yourself
beat
a
the
roster
clock?
Spot? Give yourself a roster
why
spot.
Why would you be trying to artificially get him back before just put him on the 60-day
yes.
IL?
No, I'm with you. And because now I don't know how this works. Could you retro it to the original date?
I would think.
Yeah, because he hasn't come back. I would think it's retro the original day.
Oh, if that's the case, I'd definitely do the 60 day.
Yeah.
Even if not, like, why would you not give him a full, basically, 2 months? Like, after the way this has gone with him repeatedly, and then the whole sweeper, change the delivery thing, all that. I mean, look, I'd love to know what Grayson thinks in hindsight about never pitching through the, you know, certainly never pitching through the sixth inning in the minors and barely ever pitching through the fifth, never throwing more than 100 inning in the minors. In hindsight, what he thinks about trying to pick up a sweeper while he changes delivering on the fly. What he thinks about that pitch moving forward.
Well, I want to know whose call it was.
The tenor of the relationship and the communication between him and the front office, like, it begs a lot of questions.
Grayson Rodriguez, one thing we know for sure, he can't stay healthy, so I think it's an easy choice to put on the 60-day IL. We're going to continue talking Orioles later. Remember, coming at 4 o'clock, we're going to talk to Walt Williams talking Terps, so you're going to want to hear that. And nobody wants to miss Bounce Back Fallback. That's at 3:30. But Mike Bordick, Oriole Hall of Famer, part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight coverage. We'll get his thoughts on Grayson Rodriguez, on Gunnar Henderson, on the O's as they open the season Thursday. Bordy joins us next here on The Fan.